Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish Podcast.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name is George Cooper and welcome to the show. It was the European pipe dream derby, but it wasn't to be. You have to go back to March 1985 for Fulham's last win at Wolves. That's a run of 18 games in the league and cup without a win at the Molyneux. Wolves up to 8th. Fulham remained firmly stapled to 12th place. I think we're going to remain in 12th to the day I die at this rate. Spurned chances, defensive lapses, it wasn't to be, but we can't help feeling that this was a massive opportunity missed. No horn today, it would have been three in a row, but it remains firmly in the horn cupboard. I don't know, where do people keep their horns? Anyway, moving on. joining me today is Lizzie Barnard. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Coops?
I'm all right, I'm good. Farrell Monk's also with me. How are you, good sir?
Not as horny as you are, probably, but still pretty good.
And I'm also joined by Jack Kelly. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, actually. Thank you.
Oh, good, good stuff. No, sometimes when you get Jack Kelly after a loss, you're sort of a sort of Eeyore-esque figure, crestfallen, staring longingly into the middle distance, but you seem a little bit more chipper today.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not worth being that annoyed about, really. We're in a very fortunate position where we're mid-table in the Premier League, and that's all we can ask for, really.
Good, positive, mental attitude, Jack. You got some three-word reviews for us as well, if you wouldn't mind kicking things off.
Yeah, no, I do. At Dan Bloke with low-quality game. Our very own Dan Cook with Moller neutered in attack. Ross McSweeney with Moller rue those chances. Which is, I like. And No Justice, No Peace at Rick Cardis with hashtag woeful second half.
Yeah, it wasn't a great second half showing. I mean, in the first half, Faz, it was a very entertaining game. It was end-to-end. Fulham had the lion's share of the chances, which we'll come on to in a little bit more detail. But coming off the blocks in this match, there was that sense of optimism around the club. As I mentioned earlier, we were going into hopefully making it three wins in a row. This Wolves side is so depleted. The injury issues that they have up front, all over their squad. I mean, surely this game has to go down as a huge opportunity missed.
Yes and no. I think that given everything that happened in the game, but also the circumstances around the game, that really nothing was riding on it. Yeah, obviously that we had an outside chance of reaching Europe and we don't really have any risk of relegation now. That it was a bit of a, it's a bit of a bonus chance opportunity missed. But considering the performance overall, if you take the first and second half into account, you know, Fulham were well worth the win. And I think that's nothing to be too disappointed about. The fact that they were able to go into a game with not that much riding on it, still produce, I thought, overall a very good performance, create lots and lots of chances. And we were beaten by a really deflected goal, a bit of a defensive mix-up for the first one. I think overall, I think Marco Silva and the Fulham fans should be pretty happy, despite it was a loss after all.
I totally appreciate where you're coming from, Farrow. I think in the first half in particular, Fulham really took the game to this very accomplished Wolves side, and they're doing, you know, amazing things under Gary O'Neill. But I feel like in the second half, we just let them into the match way more. Mario Lemina seemed to be absolutely everywhere. Their press was just too much for us. I mean, Lizzie, are you more on Farrell's side of the fence and thinking it was a good performance, it just wasn't our day? Or do you feel like maybe there should have been more from this side, particularly in the second half?
I have quite a cheery, like, it is what it is attitude about this. Having said that, though, I think the second half was really poor, and Wolves just had so much more intention about the way that they played. So it was disappointing that we couldn't capitalise on that. And while it was frustrating, obviously, that we missed chances as well in the first half, like, those things happen and another day we bury them. But the second half I was more disappointed in, for sure.
It was just frustrating. I mean, as I said, I mean, like, tagging on again to what you said, Farrah, I don't think there's anything to be concerned about here. It was just a case of we didn't take our chances, didn't capitalise on the moments in the game where we were the dominant side, and then let Wolves back in with a few kind of, you know, defensive lapses and a bit of bad luck, I'd say. I mean, Jack, last weekend you said that you felt that our home performance against Brighton was overall the most complete performance of the season, taking into account the clean sheet, the way we took our chances, the way we dominated play against a very, very good side. Would you say that this match against Wolves, although, you know, it's none of us are losing our heads about it, doesn't matter really in the grand scheme of things, but do you feel like it would be fair to say that perhaps yesterday was one of our most frustrating performances?
Yeah, I think so. I think with the amount of chances we created in the first half, let's not forget, you know, Wilson was played in on goal. I think it was a smart finish with the outside of his foot, but he could have taken a touch and been a little bit more composed. Tosin, of course, hit the bar. So yeah, there was frustrating elements to it. The frustration from my side of things was just the way in which we conceded both those goals. I mean, the deflections, you know, those things happen once per season. It's very unlucky. It sort of wrong foots the keeper and bundles in. But the first goal, Bassi sort of, I think, misses the ball. And then suddenly, when they pull the ball back, we're sort of not really set for that ball to be pulled back. And it's an easy finish for, what was it, Ike Nouri in the end. So I think the frustration comes from just when we were on top, we didn't take those chances and the game could have completely changed. And if we'd have scored, you know, when we were in the ascendancy. And then to have the likes of Bellegarde and Neto, arguably their two best players, go off injured, I was thinking, well, here we go. This is a great chance for us now. And it came out the second half and it was like chalk and cheese, the performance from the first. And that was... Because obviously, you know, Neto came off right before half time. So at half time, Marco must have said to the players, you know, let's have these. You know, their biggest attacking threat is now off the pitch. Bellegarde's also off the pitch. We can nullify them in attack and continue the way we play, and we can get a goal here. And the complete opposite happened. I think Gary O'Neill probably used the injuries as motivation to be like, look, you guys are good enough to beat Fulham, and they did. But you know, we will live to fight another day, and we've got Spurs next week at home, and I really fancy us, actually.
Yeah, nice one to look forward to. It'd be a big occasion. 5:30 kick-off as well, which buys everyone a couple of extra hours in the pub. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that game under the lights. Real chance to bounce back. I mean, let's come on to the chances, Farrell. So I think the first one that deserves a bit of attention would be Harry Wilson's through on goal inability to take it on your right foot. I mean, like, have you ever seen a player who is more wed to his left foot than Harry Wilson? It was amazing build-up play. The ball from Iwobi was just perfectly weighted there on a plate. I know there's a very, very, very accomplished goalkeeper in the form of Jose Sarr in front of him, and he still has quite a lot to do. But given the form that he's been in these last few weeks, you've got to be scoring that.
I love your opening gambit about Harry Wilson being wedded to his left foot, and then we literally have Tom Kearney as the club captain, who I don't think has ever passed it with his right foot, let alone had a goal. It was a strange little finish. You can obviously see what he's trying to do and whatnot, I don't know what it is about Fulham. Like, I always feel like with 1v1s, we don't really have that clinical player in the team that, you know, as soon as they're going to go through on goal, they're going to score every single time. Even when Mitrovic went 1v1, which wasn't that often, I wasn't feeling that confident. But yeah, I think a lot of credit has to go to the team to create that chance. Like, I think it's a wonderful bit of build-up play. The reinvigorated Sasha Lukic with a wonderful backheel to release Iwobi in the centre of the park. And it's a perfectly weighted ball to Harry Wilson. I think it's just it's a wonderful move and it's pleasing to see. But yeah, really should have done better. I think that, you know, Jose Sarr has done well to cover the distance and close it down. And maybe Harry Wilson should have rounded in with so much space behind him. But, you know, disappointing they didn't finish it, especially since Harry Wilson is one of our players in good form at the moment.
Given how agile Harry Wilson is, you got to back yourself to take it around the keeper there. Like, his acceleration, his agility. Anyway, didn't go in.
Maybe it was the fact that he was put through 1v1 last week and didn't have the pace to create a really good shooting opportunity for himself that he was actually chased down by the defender, and he lacked a bit of confidence in that regard. That it was like, well, I need to take this early, otherwise the defender's going to catch me up here. Maybe that was playing on his mind.
Perhaps. It's an interesting take, but I mean, Harry, if you're listening, back yourself, lad. Back yourself. We're all behind you. Lizzie, I just want to ask about Tosin's chance that ricocheted off the crossbar, and you know, it fell to him. Obviously, he's not our starting centre forward, so there's only so much that can be expected of him. But given the technical ability that he has and how close he was, I would argue it was the bigger of the two chances, to be honest. What's your take on this? I feel like you've got to be at least hitting the target there.
I think it was the bigger of the two chances, but I think it was the better of the two misses, if that makes sense. Because a couple of inches lower and that's in the net, and we're all celebrating. And as you say, he's not a striker. He doesn't have that precise instinct for goal. So even though it was a bigger chance, I think it's more understandable that he missed it.
I think that makes sense. Yeah. But I mean, we could have at that point been going into the game 2-0 up. I believe that was both those chances were before Wolves got their goal. And this is a Wolves side who loves to play on the counter-attack and you want to go up against. And they were like, if either of those had gone in, Fulham go on to win this game comfortably, but c'est la vie. Farrell, like the defensive header from Bassey, or non-header, I mean, I'm Bassey's biggest fan. I'm absolutely loving watching him play in this Fulham side at the minute. But I feel like it's surely got to go down as a defensive error. He just doesn't clear his lines at all. The sort of back off the back of the head into the feet of the Wolves player. I think it's a really poor bit of defending, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I think it's a total misjudgment of the flight of the ball, and he gets kind of stuck under it, and he couldn't generate enough power to get the ball away as much. So yeah, I think absolutely a bit of a defensive error. And I'm with you. I'm a big fan of Calvin Bassey. He's really won me over this season, defensively and with the ball at his feet, I think. And that's what Marco Silva loves from his defender. So he really fits into the system. But yeah, it's just a really poor bit of defending, I feel like. I think he's got enough credit in the bank anyway, just for his sake.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. But anyway, moving on, you know, it happens occasionally. I just want to talk for a minute, Liz, about Mario Lemina, or Mario Jr. as he's now known, if you look at the back of his shirt. I mean, he was everywhere yesterday, and I always liked him when he was at Fulham. He's kind of written himself into Fulham folklore a bit with that goal at Anfield in the lockdown season, and obviously the tears as we faced the very opponents that we faced yesterday. I mean, like, I can't help looking at him and think he would be such a nice addition to this squad. Just imagine having that midfield, like, quad of Lemina, Lukic, Harrison Reed and Paulinho. That is a force to be reckoned with. Would you take him back in a heartbeat, as I would, Liz?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, there's that history there, isn't there? And the goal at Anfield, we all remember, even though none of us were there. But he, some of his tackles yesterday, there was a header he made as well in the first half. And I just thought, oh, goodness, I wish he was on our team. I thought he ran the game yesterday. It was really, really impressive.
Mm, he's kind of got the crunching tackle of Paulinho, but he's got the strength in the transition that Alex Iwobi has as well. And then just the stamina of Harrison Reed as well. It's just, he's a wonderful footballer and all credit to him yesterday. I thought Ait Nouri as well, the Algerian, was phenomenal. Perhaps the player in the Premier League who looks the most beyond his years. He's 22 years old, that lad. And yet he looks like he's in the sort of twilight of his career. I've never seen a more astute man, perhaps, other than our very own Farrell Monk, but
the Luke Littler of the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly. But I think credit is justifiably needs to be thrown his way. And also, Jack, I mean, Jose Sarr made some fantastic saves towards the end when we were trying to get back into it. Do you feel like if Wolves don't have a keeper as accomplished as him, we perhaps would have found our way in? I'm thinking in particular about that double save from Paulinho.
I mean, that was a good save, but the one that sticks out for me is the one from Adama Traore. I mean, when Adama Traore is running at pace at the goal and then hits a shot of that with that power behind it, Sarr just saves it. Incredibly, it's an incredible save.
I also think the Pereira shot was a much better save than anyone
in the first half
gives it credit for. The one in the first half, I think that's an outstanding save.
Yeah, for sure.
He really does sort of like anticipate it. Yeah, it's a nice little height for him, but I think it's if Sarr doesn't get his pinky on that, that's nestling in the side netting.
It was a really impressive goalkeeping display. And sometimes this happens. It's just not your day. You come up against a keeper who's just on the top of his game. He actually got substituted last week for Daniel Bentley. So I was thinking there's maybe a chance he won't play. But obviously he did and made some remarkable saves. And when your luck's out, your luck's out. But I have to say, like, I have no bitterness towards this defeat whatsoever. I think Wolves and the way they've applied themselves this season, even from minute one, when they went to Old Trafford and lost in quite controversial circumstances to Manchester United, they've been brilliant. I mean, when the chips are down and Lopetegui went in the summer and suddenly they were panicking a little bit because three games before the season they were managerless, Gary O'Neill came in after harshly being sacked by Bournemouth. And I tell you what, they're eighth in the table. And I wouldn't say I'm delighted for them, but I just think he comes across as a very nice, very grounded manager who just wants the best for his team and himself. Well, his team. And of course, his career. And every time I've come across him, he's been wonderful, a lovely guy. And there was a few instances in the season where two or three weeks in a row, they got absolutely shafted by VAR, and he was seething. But he's turned that sort of around. And you know, even when Bellegarde and Neto came off, they still spun that into positives and won the game. And you know, I could sit here and say, oh, Wolves this, Wolves that, but they were brilliant at times in the second half, and it was just poor that Fulham managed to obviously lose the game. But credit, full credit to Wolves, a good Premier League team and a good manager at the helm.
Yeah, without meaning to sound too much like the famous Mike Bassett scene, three cheers for the Mexicans, I think you have to tip your cap to what Gary O'Neill has done. I mean, for me, like, I think I'm somewhat influenced by the years where Fulham used to play Wolves and they'd have the likes of Carl Henry in the central midfield. There was that game that we played at Craven Cottage where Bobby Zamora broke his leg, and they were just a really tough, ugly, lump it up top to the big man kind of side. And I remember Danny Murphy did that press conference where he called them out and said, yeah, you know, you've got teams like Wolves who just don't want to play football and they just want to, you know, break up defence. And it's I think his overall sentiment was that it's like not really good for the league. And to see the team that they are now, easy on the eye, exciting, dynamic, high press, counter-attacking football. I feel like they are totally where they deserve to be. Enough about Wolves. Let's get back to quickly just to round off the Saturday's game. Iwobi's goal, it was a strange little goal, wasn't it? It just seems to sort of pop up out of nowhere. Lizzie, I mean, I guess the most positive thing. It was very much consolation goal, last kick of the game, or thereabouts. But little assist for Breuer, not too bad. Hopefully give him a bit of confidence, you reckon?
Yeah, I think so. It looked really slapdash, but also looked quite well worked in some ways. Like, people are in the right places at the right time, and as we know, that takes skill. But yeah, just too late to do anything with it, unfortunately.
It was actually a remarkably good finish from Iwobi. I think he got a...
It's a great goal.
Yeah, he's got to react to that and also divert it towards goal as well when it's going away from goal. I think it's actually quite a remarkable finish. Yeah, I think kudos to that. And just back to Brody as well. Like, I actually thought he was pretty good when he came on yesterday. Obviously, it didn't work on. I think that's his best sort of like cameo appearance we've seen so far. Obviously, there's a lot more minutes there, but yeah, I think I'm now less worried if, for example, Muniz is injured or suspended and we have to bring in Brody. But Jimenez is back, I think, next week. I think
it was amazing reflexes from both Breuer and Iwobi. It was like a sort of pinball goal, wasn't it? It was just like fired in and then bam, bam, back of the net. Lizzie, I think there's a good chance now to check in on your survival spreadsheet. I'm assuming things are looking fine and dandy, even despite the result yesterday.
Yeah, things are looking pretty rosy. Obviously, wins at Man U and at home to Brighton, both games we weren't expecting to win. So that's great. I did have Wolves away down as a must draw, but this is when I thought they would be relegated.
A must draw?
At the beginning of the season.
The idea of a must draw is really funny.
Yeah. Can't afford to lose, maybe, is what I'm meaning to say. So I think that's fine. But generally, things are looking really positive with those two results. And yeah, hopefully some wins to come, maybe. Some nice away wins. We still play Brentford, West Ham. There are like our harder away teams, so it'd be nice to pick up some points there.
Absolutely. We've got Sheffield away and Nottingham Forest away coming up after our home fixture against Tottenham. So hopefully, don't want to jinx anything, but some exciting games to come. Right, that'll do for part one. Don't go anywhere because we'll be back with some of your questions.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back. It's the Fulhamish podcast. I'm George Cooper. I'm joined by Lizzie, Farrell, and Jack. Thanks very much to NordVPN for sponsoring this episode of Fulhamish. Now, as I'm sure you're aware, you can use NordVPN to watch footy wherever you are in the world, even if the destination you are in is geo-blocked. So, for example, Sam, we know I've got ESPN Plus subscriptions, totally legally, before anyone says, which allows you to watch Premier League games from America. But you can change your location using NordVPN to America, which means that you can, yeah, watch Premier League games from UK. And that includes 3pm blackout ones. You can use one account on up to six devices, and you can try it for free for 30 days, commitment-free, thanks to Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. And at this very moment, Fulhamish listeners can get a discount for 4 free months by going to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Also, if you're in the UK, USA, Australia or Canada, you can get an Uber Eats voucher when you sign up using that very link. So, Jack Kelly, have you used the Uber Eats voucher to get your post-victory takeaway at any point of this season?
No, I haven't, actually, disappointingly. I started using VPN last summer and it was very helpful whilst I was in France because we were watching the Ashes and the Summer Series. So that was very fun. But you can't really get Uber Eats in... Well, I suppose you can, but you can't really get Uber Eats in Normandy, France. But if I did get an Uber Eats today, I'm really craving KFC, but I don't want to upset my mother on Mother's Day by doing that. Anyway, back to the...
Amazing, amazing plug there, Jack. Seamless. I think that must be the best ad in the history of podcasts. Fantastic. So for that great rate, 4 3 months plus an Uber Eats voucher in participating countries, go to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Thank you, Jack Kelly.
No, you're welcome.
Right. After that smooth transition, we've got some of your questions. So I'd like to start this one with this one from Harrison. Jack, I'm going to throw it to you. He says, hello, Fulhamish. Frustrated Fulham fan writing in from Santa Barbara, California. Lovely part of the world. Writing this question in the 72nd minute as I'm struggling to even get to full time of this game without writing this question down, which is a bit of a vent. I love that Marco has a meritocracy-based approach to setting his lineup. He sets the tone within the squad that if you perform well, your starting position is yours to lose. But has he gone too far? Surely, we're one of the only teams in the league, brackets maybe Europe, who would sit by their, who would sit by far their best player on the bench in order to make a cultural statement. It was an unbelievably beatable Wolves side, and that was probably the game that keeps our European dreams alive, regardless of not whether they're unlikely. Let's attack it with our best players on the pitch. Love the pod. Thank you for being my therapist on this question from Harrison. So obviously we're talking about Polina. Marco Silva opted to keep Sasa Lukic in the starting 11. He's been brilliant the games in which Polina has been suspended. So I can totally see why Marco would leave him in the lineup. I mean, he's a man of principle, right, Marco Silva? I can see all of the logic, and I feel like this is these principles which makes him really popular within the squad. However, Jack, on this occasion, do you feel like we should have brought back Paulinho? Where do you sit on this side?
That's a very interesting question because, you know, all the chat and the build-up to this game, we were expecting Paulinho just to come seamlessly back into the team. But the thing is, like, since Paulinho's been out for two games, we've arguably had our two best performances of the season at United and Brighton with a midfield trio of obviously Pereira and the 10, Sasha Lukic and Harrison Reed, and those two complement each other very, very well. And obviously Paulinho is the best midfielder we've had, you know, since Moussa Dembélé. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean he just sort of walks back in the team. I think that the continuity of the last two performances, you know, why not just, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But the thing is, Paulinho is such a good player and he's such an incredible monster when it comes to tackling and just disrupting play, that we could have benefited from yesterday from the start. However, I respect Marco so much where he's just gone, you know what? He might be our best player, but Lukic and Reed, who haven't had enough game time this season, in my personal opinion, if they're working together very well, let's just keep it the way it is. And my issue was that when Paulinho did eventually come on, he was like a bull in a china shop. He got a yellow within 3 minutes. He almost got himself sent off and he'd just come back from a suspension. Don't get me wrong, I love Paulinho more than most Fulham players in history of Fulham. However, fair play to Marco for doing this because it's so easy for everyone just to be like, yeah, Pallini just comes back in, easy. But then you have to drop one of Reed and Lukic, and I feel that's unfair given the performances they put in over the last two games. However, next week against Spurs, Jay Pally starts, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think I'm not a football manager and I'm not as brave a man as Marco Silva, but I think if I was him, I would bring Paulinho back in. However, I massively, massively, massively respect his decision to stick with Lukic. Farrell, where do you sit with this discussion? Are you in agreement with Jack and I, or do you think Jay Pally comes in straight away?
I think I'm firmly on the, you know, with you guys on this. You know, I thought personally speaking that he was going to bring Paulinho back in, but Marco has got a track record of being faithful to the players that are playing quite well at the moment, and Saša Lukić with his reinvigorated Fulham career, absolutely. I don't think anyone would have actually begrudged him that much of him starting over Paulinho yesterday. And if you think about it, again, in that first half, we had one of our better performances of the season and should have arguably gone in 2-0 up. And if we end up winning that game 2-0 with Saša Lukić starting, I don't think we would have got that email from Harrison with all due respect. You know, I think there's an argument perhaps next week that we do start instead of Harrison Reed. We have both Paulinho and Saša Lukić in the midfield. The only thing I think is that Saša Lukić is quite clearly very good at playing from deep and charging forward rather than his back to goal. So I would be arguing against pushing him too far up, really. But yeah, I think Paulinho will probably come back in next week, but that is quite harsh on Saša because I think he also played really well yesterday as well.
Yeah, I imagine we'll see Paulinho back for the Spurs game. But time will tell, obviously. Lizzie, we've had a couple of questions on Tosin Adebayo. So the first is from Michael B, who asks, with Tosin continuing to refute contract extensions and European qualification quite unlikely, is it time to bed in a Diop-Bassey partnership to see if it works? And then just on that point as well, Will Kemp adds, is the fact that Tosin won't sign a contract a bit of a blessing in disguise? He's a brilliant defender in the air, but loses the ball when playing out and struggles to make simple passes. At least if he goes, Marco can find a defender he wants to compliment Bassey. Keep up the good work. I guess the thing that links both of these questions are, Tosin is looking increasingly unlikely that he's going to be with us next season. Regardless of how well he's been playing or whatever, it is now the fact that we don't really have much on the line the time to see whether the partnership of Diop and Bassey is going to work. Or even regardless of the fact whether it's going to work, we should do that because we know that Diop's going to be our player. Where do you stand, Lizzie?
I don't think so. I think we should continue to play Tosin and Bassey because that's our best centre-back partnership. And although Tosin has some faults, I think he's still part of that best duo. In terms of we should drop him because we don't think he's going to sign a contract extension and we're not sure what's happening, I agree it does look increasingly unlikely. But I think until it is impossible, we shouldn't really be having this conversation. Imagine it's sort of teetering on the brink and it's probably not going to happen and then he gets dropped. That means it's definitely not going to happen. And I think it would be really important for Tosin to sign his future to us. So while there's still a possibility, I really think we should keep playing them. And then even beyond them, like I know the Premier League is a different level of intensity and et cetera, but proper planning for what happens if/when Tosin does go and pre-season is for bedding in new players and new partnerships. We shouldn't use the last 10 games of the season to drop part of our best centre-back duo. Because we're worried about what's going to happen next season, in my opinion.
It's an interesting discussion because we've seen Marco do it before. I think back to last year when Manus Solomon was fit, but it was evident that he wasn't going to be with us beyond the end of last season. And despite the fact, I think there were a lot of times where we could have really done with him and he would have genuinely been our strongest option, certainly from an attacking point of view. Marco refused to play him. So that makes me think that, I don't know whether Tosin's just being playing incredibly hard to get, or like leading us on to a certain extent where he's sort of, he's not 100% gone. Because I genuinely do feel if Sosin came out and had, you know, had all but agreed to go to a different club, I do think Marco would drop him, which makes me think that there's still a chance that he might stay. Am I being incredibly naive here, Liz?
I don't think so. I think there's still a possibility he stays. And also, I don't think we should drop him in terms of in the same way that we dropped Solomon, because I think stability in the back line is what's really important. And going up front, it's okay to have a bit more flexibility, but we want to have stability at the back. I mean,
it is worth noting that Dom Smith of the Standard, the brilliant Dom Smith, he, from the embargoed section of the Friday press conference, he did confirm that Fulham are locked in talks as they seek to tie down Tosin, Bobby D. Cordova-Reed and Kenny Tettet to new contracts. So we are in, oh my bloody hell, we are in talks with those three. And it's encouraging. I mean, you make a great point there, George, in terms of, you know, when Manuel Solomon, you know, spun my head 360 and didn't clap the away fans at Anfield last season, my head was on Jupiter. However, and then obviously subsequently didn't play Solomon for the rest of the season, basically benched him, and because he knew that Solomon's head was basically gone, and well, everyone's head's gone at the moment, towards Tottenham Hotspur. However, it's a good point, you know, Tosin's an integral part of the back four, or whatever. But the fact he's, you know, still locked in contract talks, we're negotiating and renegotiating with Tosin because he apparently turned down a contract earlier in the season. It's just good that he is part of the team. He is still in the plans. Therefore, there is a future for Tosin. And that partnership with Bassey is, you know, really, really good, and it's blossoming quite nicely. Therefore, it would make nice sense for him to sign on a new contract. But then again, he has made it clear that he does sort of want to progress his career. But I think Fulham's a good place for Tosin, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I do totally agree. And obviously, we all know how accomplished a defender he is, but I don't know. Does he walk into the likes of an Aston Villa, or I'm trying to think of the clubs that are sort of more appealing than Fulham are in terms of a Premier League perspective. And I don't know. I really do hope he stays though, because I think he's just such a valuable squad player, and also he just seems like a really, really lovely guy that is very popular within the dressing room. So I will be sad to see him go if he does eventually depart. One last question before we wrap up. I'm going to chuck this one to you, Jax. I know you're quite across the academy prospects that we've got. So CM Quark asks, Liverpool seem to be very successful despite frequently playing 2 to 3 youngsters. Why can't we do that? It just never seems to happen in Fulham, despite the great academy. I mean, it's a question that we've spoken about time and time again on the podcast, but is now the opportunity, much like you said, you know, we're safe there or thereabouts, Europe's kind of slipping through our fingertips. Is now the time that we can embed some youngsters?
This seems like a question that just comes up every season, because yet again, an amazing week for the academy, or a weekend for the academy. In fact, I know we beat West Ham. The under-18s beat West Ham. Sorry, the under-21s beat West Ham on Friday. And then we played Arsenal yesterday. Yeah, we beat them 3-0. And then the under-18s played Arsenal yesterday, and it was a 1-0 win. So a good weekend for the academy. And we have an amazing academy. And some of those players that are coming through are brilliant. We're in a really difficult position where obviously Marco Silva's got a mentality where he strives to be or to finish in the best possible position for Fulham. And it does feel as though he has to play his senior players to get the best results for the team, for the season, to move up at the table, which means that there are seldom chances for youth players to come through. We've seen Josh King make the bench this season, which is brilliant. We've seen a few others as well. We've seen Marshall Goddo have a really good season at Wigan. Bowie, really good season at Northampton. Harris, really... he's just joining January, but promising at Exeter. And then we saw the likes of Ollie O'Neill leave for Leyton Orient, and he's doing unbelievably well at Leyton Orient. Because we're an established Premier League team now, and because we're trying to sort of push up to the next level, it does feel like it's very difficult for youth players to break into the team. We saw Jace Lansfield play a little bit last season before going out to Exeter on loan. It just feels like the way the clubs run at the moment, it's very difficult for those to break in. The best they can sort of hope for is a cup game here and there, a bench appearance here and there if there's injuries in the squad. I get the point they're making, and like obviously Liverpool have integrated youth into their team because they've had to, because of the injuries they've had this season. And it just so happens that they're on the biggest stage in the EFL Cup final and they perform well. Therefore, you know, people look at that and go, well, why can't we do that? It's just because we're on a different level. Like, our academy is very, very good, but what am I trying to say? Honestly, it's just one of those ones where it's just like, it's very difficult to integrate youth into a team where we're sort of like just trying to stabilize ourselves as a Premier League team. In the Championship, it was a little bit different because you can sort of get away with it because you can play youth players here and there because the squad doesn't have that much Premier League quality. Therefore, you can sort of cherry pick a couple of youth players. Oh, I think you'll suit this style of play, or you'll suit this squad. Like we saw with Carvalho, and that obviously came off very well. I've rattled on for ages. I hadn't really made a point here, but it is difficult to get youth players playing in the first team or making the step up to the first team when you're sort of just, even when we were yo-yoing, I mean, that's difficult in itself because you don't really know where you stand. But even as an established Premier League team, maybe at the end of the season, we might see a couple. But again, we say this every season and it doesn't really happen. However, massive kudos to Hugh Jennings and Wigley, Steve Wigley, for the work they've done in the last few years. It's been magnificent.
I think one of the things you're trying to say is that basically, like, Marco is...
I think what you meant to say was...
I know you laboured the point, but I'm going to labour the point even more.
Go on, yeah.
It's just, I think succinctly, that Marco's job is to get points now, not to develop players for 3-4 years' time. And at the level of the Premier League that we are now, where basically we're only 2 or 3 bad results away from, you know, being dragged into a relegation battle at any particular time, he can't afford to take risks on, you know, not starting Rodrigo Muniz or Raul Jimenez or Armando Broja up front, and instead starting Jace Stansfield or Kieran Bowie, for example. He needs to play his best players now, not his best players in three or four years' time.
Lizzie, you had a point?
Yeah, I actually don't think Liverpool are doing that well with all their youth players. Like, I know obviously they won the cup final and they won last weekend as well and they beat Luton. But the cup final was, they were dominated by Chelsea and scored a last minute winner. A win against Luton, like, not really to be like, lads, it's Luton, but lads, it's Luton. And then the win against Forest, they benefited from an extremely lucky refereeing decision and scored a last minute winner against a team that are basically fighting for their lives. So I don't think that this, like, youth resurgence for Liverpool is actually sustainable. Not that we're a Liverpool podcast, but I think their success is being slightly overplayed.
Mm. Interesting points from all perspectives. I do totally, going back to Fulham, I think it will take us being a solidified mid-table Premier League team, you know, safe before Christmas kind of vibes, before we start seeing youth come into the starting lineups or make bench appearances. I do think that's...
If we're safe before Christmas, then you'd be going towards Europe. So then again, I don't think they would integrate youth. So it's very hard to sort of do this unless...
Takes a lot of...
Well, it's just very hard to do.
It's a lot of circumstances that have got to align. And obviously, Fulham as a club are in a very different position to Liverpool. But yeah, anyway, an interesting point and discussion regardless. All right, I think that will do for today's podcast. It's been very fun, despite the disappointing results. Jack, before we round up, have you got a favourite 3-word review? I'm going to try and long out this question as I see he's scrambling for his phone.
I just clicked on the wrong app.
And is there one in off the... Oh, God. What app have you just opened?
I mean, we've made lots of solar system references today. Where's Jack's head right now? Neptune? Uranus?
It's probably thinking about what I'm going to eat in the next 10, 15 minutes.
What?
And yeah, like I said, I can't get KFC. Anyway, Ross McSweeney. I'm going with Ross McSweeney for the 3-word review. with Molyneux those chances.
Molyneux those chances.
It's a good name.
Good job, Ross McSweeney. Thank you very much. And thank you very much to my guests today, Farrell Monk. It's been a joy having you. The pleasure of your company this morning.
Next time I'll do it alongside you from your bedroom as well. It's been lovely.
Lizzie, great to see you as always. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. I had a lot of fun despite the result.
And cheers, Jack Kelly. Go get yourself a KFC, and a traditional Mother's Day KFC, and we'll take it from there.
She will be Tyrone fuming if I get a takeaway. Also, just wanted to say massive thank you for 6,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. That is something that we're very proud of, and we're continuing to grow the channel.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I mean, you're doing amazing things over on that channel, Jack. Hats off to you. And before we go, just happy Mother's Day to all of those FFC mums out there. We'll be back on Thursday with the Thursday Club. Until then, have a great week. Have a good Mother's Day, and come on, you Whites.